Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not even going to be under us.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind, a Wisconsin Eyes look at this week in the Capitol with a special guest. Last week, Ray Cross, UW System President, announced you're going to be retiring. I'm so glad you joined us for the first few minutes here. Thanks very much.
Oh, I'm pleased to be here.
J.R. and I are going to take turns asking questions for a few minutes. I go first.
Keep them simple.
Before beauty.
thank you, J.R. Nice reminder. 10 years ago, GPR support for the UW system was at, let me get this right, 24%. This year, it's about 17%, a significant drop in a budget for an agency, a system with about $6 billion. You're retiring, so now maybe you can answer this question. What would be an ideal number for state tax dollars to subsidize the UW system? An ideal percentage.
I'm not sure you should weigh it in percent, and I'll say this. Actually, even though the percentage is down in terms of our dollars from the state, the actual amount is up. What that reflects is an increased dependence on tuition, and that can only go so far. You end up making it impossible for students of moderate income, or families of moderate income, to go to college. And we're seeing that stress put on families and on students through student debt and other indicators that are troublesome to all of us. So yes, I think the state needs to assume a larger portion. I don't know what that magic number is, because at some point, with frozen tuition and a reduction in our state funds, we are depleting resources, and that does in fact affect quality, our ability to attract and retain not just students but faculty.
Go ahead, Chair.
So, in your time as president, there's a perception on the Capitol that you are working to rebuild the relationship with Republican lawmakers. It had deteriorated for some time. But there's always this warning, it seemed like, that President Cross is not going to pay dividends. You alluded to that this past summer with the budget process. You got kicked in the shins. I guess I want to ask a two-part question. One, do you feel like you repaired that relationship? And two, did you get tired of getting kicked in the shins and decide that's part of why I want to retire now?
No, I didn't. It's not why I want to retire. I'm old, JR. Let's start with that. So that's another part. I need to.
For the record, you're 75.
Thanks, Steve. You just added a few years to it. I think it's important to note that I think we have rebuilt some relationships on both sides of the aisle. I think that's important. However, it takes time to build trust, and you don't recover from the distrust that existed quickly. It takes time. And I hope that one of my legacies is the foundation for continued improvement in trust between the Capitol and its public universities. However, everywhere I've been, there's always tension between the legislature, governor, and the university, because there's such, we're a huge piece of the discretionary portion of the budget. And the non-discretionary portion is growing and growing and growing. So we are vulnerable always in that respect, because we're a part of the discretionary portion. JR.
I apologize if I got your age wrong, and I know you accept apologies. But here's my question: I talked to a regent this week who said your legacy largely is going to be two things. Number one, you, even though you said kicked in the shins, you got $1 billion to remodel and rebuild critical infrastructure on the campuses. Secondly, you pulled off with a minimum of political pushback the merger of the 2 years into the 4 years. Do you agree with that assessment, Ray?
Time will tell. I think, first of all, the capital budget we got was closer to $1.3
billion. Thank you for the correction.
because it's embedded in a couple of places. But that was a huge win for us. That's probably the largest capital budget we've ever gotten in real dollars. And we badly needed that. A lot of our infrastructure has deteriorated, and it's principally being used to repair, replace, and renovate existing spaces, not to add space. But I also think that the operational side of the university, there's still a level of distrust. And I felt up until right near the very end that we had a lot of commitments, strong commitment from leadership and from others in the Capitol on both sides of the spectrum that would be supportive of not necessarily what we ask for, but at least at CPI. And that was a that came through over and over again, and at the last minute that was dropped on us, boom, and that was right before Memorial Day weekend. So we didn't have much of an ability to deal with it, even though I spent most of the weekend on the phone.
Well, a very quick follow-up. The folding of the two-year colleges into the four-year institution, was that a reflection that Wisconsin has too much higher ed, right?
No, it wasn't. And let me try to phrase it this way. When you look at the demographics facing the state, and we've been studying that for a long time, we anticipated these declines in enrollment, given the number of high school graduates coming into the pipeline. That's the one area in social science that's reasonably accurate in their predictions. We know how many kindergartners there are. Okay, 18 years later, here's what we should have for high school graduates. Having said that, many of those areas where the two-year campuses are located, most of them, are in small, more rural communities. That's why they're there. So the challenge then is they are suffering this in two ways, not only the declining 18-year-olds, but also those 18-year-olds that do graduate from high school are exiting and headed for more urban communities. So they're seeing a double whammy. The purpose of this was, how do we sustain these communities? Sustain these campuses so these communities can continue to grow and thrive, because it's essential. And when I talked to county execs, they would say, Ray, whatever you do, please, please, we need the University of Wisconsin, a presence in our community. And that's what we're trying to sustain. And we're going to do our best, and we're committed to do that.
In the last decade, you saw cuts from the budgets and state funding. The last two budgets, the trend has been toward this performance-based funding. Essentially hit these benchmarks to get this money. My question is this moving the university toward being a place where you go find a job rather than find yourself? And is that a good thing for higher education to be moving more toward focusing on getting people a job when they walk out the door, maybe not enhancing their overall perspective on life?
JR just pushed one of my buttons, so this I may go off on this one here, JR. When I went to college in the 60s, roughly 70% of the students attending college went there to find themselves, to be a better person, to grow personally. Today, it's just the opposite. About 70% of the students come to a university trying to acquire a job or a better job. I find that to be troubling to me personally, because I believe there are principal reasons you go to a university as opposed to a technical college. We prepare people for life, as John Newman argued that the very first reason you go to college is to figure out who you are and why you're here. What's my purpose? Secondly, how do I work with others? How do I fit into a community? Thirdly, Jefferson's argument, a democracy cannot survive without an educated populace. And fourth, we must be able to graduate individuals that can participate in the economy. And it's even more complicated because the jobs that will exist 2030, 2035, et cetera, of those jobs that will exist then, 30% of them don't exist today. How do I prepare individuals for that environment? So it's increasingly important that the university understand how best to develop the person in so many ways beyond just preparation for a single career path.
But to follow up, how do you still have an opportunity to prepare that person in that way to find themselves with the crushing student loan debt problem we have in this country and in Wisconsin particularly? It's an expensive place to go to figure out who you are. Does the state need to do more to address that issue if you're going to still have that mission with the university?
Yes and no. So let me try to, first of all, if you graduate, and that's the key issue related to student success and student debt, if you graduate, this is $1 million additionally on average to your income over your lifetime. So this is a minor debt, and our average debt is about $29,000 something. of the students that have debt. And you got to remember, if you took that across the whole student body, only about 55 to 60% thereabouts have debt. So if you amortize that out, it's about $20,000 roughly per student. Having said that, that's like buying a car. And this is one investment that returns a great deal of money on that. So that's one thing. We're also working on the concept of ISAs, income sharing agreements, so students can partner with businesses and others. We're doing things like the 1+3, so you can get more of your education in high school at a much cheaper cost, things of that nature. So we think we have a role to play in reducing the cost, but also getting students through faster.
Okay, we had a couple other things I want to do, but a quick yes or no answer. We all woke up this morning to a headline, a bill in the legislature would pay athletes. Bad policy?
I think it is. I think that's a dangerous policy. Why? You wanted a yes or no answer, didn't you, Steve?
I understand, but there's one other thing I got to cover, so okay, quickly.
The reason why is I believe that students are first students and second athletes. If we reverse that, this is no longer a university, it's a minor league system.
Okay, thank you. I want to put up a graphic now of a pretty interesting resume, Ray. You served in the U.S. Army in Vietnam. You were a professor at Ferris State. You were president of Northwest Tech College in Bemidji, Minnesota, president of State University of New York in Morrisville campus. You became the chancellor of UW Colleges at Extension here, 2011 to 14. February of 14, you became the system president. I have a question for men and women who served in Vietnam, and it's a common question. What life lessons did you take out of your service in Vietnam for your career?
Well, there are probably a multitude of those lessons. First, I learned that I didn't just exist for myself. I existed for those with whom I served. And we were in this together. And not a one of us was better than the other. We all had a contribution to make, and we depended on each other. And that is a wonderful lesson in life. I think we all understand that how important it is to function as a part of a community, as a team, and realizing that everybody's contribution is important. And so from you look at my career, my life here, and you have to ask yourself the question, was I the sole contributor to my success? Of course not. And I would love to be able to thank all of the people that contributed to that. And I think you really learn that in a very difficult situation like Vietnam.
I think I know the answer, but you're not going to run for any public elective office, are you?
No. No. Would you like for me to repeat that?
Ray Cross, retiring president of the UW System, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Thanks, JR.
Let's go to Wish I Was There. Representative Tony Kurtz talks about pleading with a doctor for help to avoid his son's suicide. Very emotional statement. Lieutenant Governor Barnes says alcohol is more harmful, more dangerous than marijuana. The Attorney General calls says emergency detention, holding and transporting prisoners, is crippling law enforcement resources locally. A man testifies in the Capitol that the plant derivative Kratom, subject of a committee hearing, helped with his anxiety, and legislators clash over a new law, that lame duck law requiring Finance Committee to okay legal settlements, wish I was there.
From 2000 to today, we have a 35% increase in suicide. There's colleagues that aren't being proactive like you. When I took my son to the emergency room and saw the emergency room doc, I had to spell out to him why my son was at risk for suicide. He gave me the deer in the headlight look. And if I would not have stood on that desk and said, I want my son admitted, he wouldn't have done it.
Look at the drinking laws in this state. You know, we got like three of the top 10 drunkest cities in America here in the state of Wisconsin. You know, there is more danger, more harm being done by people who are under the influence of alcohol than marijuana.
I left the doctor's office with a diagnosis of severe anxiety, depression, insomnia. I wasn't sleeping for 2 days at a time. I stumbled across Kratom when I was researching for a natural supplement to help me with everything that was going on. I got off the prescribed drugs within a month. and without issue, without withdrawal.
One topic that has come up repeatedly as I've talked to law enforcement is the need to address our emergency detention system. There are officers from many parts of the state of Wisconsin who must drive long distances to transport people who are going through a mental health crisis. Their officers are spending hours, sometimes entire shifts and sometimes overtime, away from the communities that they are supposed to be protecting and serving.
I'm happy today that for the first time this year, and we are almost in November, that we have a settlement we can actually move, but we have 18 more settlements that aren't moving. We have 10 more settlements that DOJ could send to this committee that aren't moving. I cannot find another state that requires such a laborious process that really has, it's really kind of grinded to a halt the ability of the DOJ to settle, to move settlements. They've settled these cases, you all.
The accusations are that this process doesn't work. This is actually the first one where we actually, as a committee, as a majority on the committee, actually had enough resourced information to be able to make a decision. And is that because this committee is not doing its work, or is it because there's members within this body, within this building, who don't want the process to work? Wisconsin is not the only one that the legislature has a seat at the table when dealing with settlements. So let's just be clear about that.
Meanwhile, in other news, JR, the governor formed what he's calling a complete count panel for the 2020 census. The governor says there's about 613,000 in Wisconsin's hard-to-count population. The lieutenant governor said everybody who's not counted is $1,400 in lost aid, and panel will urge people to complete the census forms, do outreach to hard-to-count communities, and talk about barriers to participation. Of course, the context here is these will be the numbers used to draw our 8 U.S. House districts, assuming we keep 8, and the legislative districts. Significance of him forming the panel?
Well, don't forget that he put money in the budget to help with the count.
Thank you, I forgot that.
We are at a different place than we were 10 years ago technology-wise, and there's an argument from Republicans of, hey, you know, we can do this without this money. Yeah. We are not really in the danger of losing a seat this time. It's more a worry for 2030 than we might lose, probably lose a seat because we're not growing as fast as other states. But yes, it's going to be very important. The count is, don't forget, subtext of the Trump administration wanting to ask a citizenship question, which was poo-pooed by the courts. But there's all kinds of questions about how well this will be received by the Hispanic community, particularly what's going on, because their count's going to be important for many things.
And now here's about a minute of video from the governor talking about his complete count and the response of Speaker Voss.
The census isn't just a head count. It's about visibility, voice, and values. In 2010, Wisconsin had one of the highest participation rates in the country, but the estimated hard-to-count population in Wisconsin is more than 600,000 people. Our Wisconsin Complete Count Committee is going to work to educate Wisconsinites on the importance of the census and will help reach those hard-to-count communities to make sure that they're counted and their voices and their votes are heard.
My idea to have these task forces, and we've been very successful from the beginning, is to drive bipartisan consensus where both sides agree and the bills actually get to become law. If the goal is to make a political talking point, you pick all people from one side of the aisle, you try to convince one or two people on the other to participate and say it's bipartisan. So if the goal is to be able to make sure that every person in Wisconsin is counted, of course we agree with that. If the goal is to focus extra effort to make sure more Democrats are counted to somehow affect redistricting, well, that's his right, but that's certainly not something that we're going to participate in to make it into a partisan exercise.
JR, I had a civil dialogue yesterday with Assembly Speaker Voss and Democratic Leader Hintz, and I got a chance to flesh out the Speaker's position on medical marijuana. He thinks it should be in pill form, which is interesting. I asked him about climate change. But here's an item that surprised me. He said that he's willing to work within his caucus to raise the age to buy vaping products, maybe 19, 20. He said 21 is a no-go. That was pretty intriguing. Mr. Hintz said you should be 21 to buy cigarettes and vaping products. And when you look at the website for the Department of Health Services, they're now saying that 1 in 5 high school students used these cigarettes in 2018. and an alarming increase since 2014. My question, JR, I was surprised that this is a potential issue for the fall session. Are you?
Little bit, just because the governor said he was interested in the bill at a luncheon we had not too long ago, but said he was concerned because he was suspicious because the vaping industry was behind, or tobacco companies were behind the bill.
Right.
He was suspicious of letting vaping off the hook.
Yep.
Don't forget, there's been a big bad publicity about vaping. Obviously, a lot of it's been linked to vaping THC cartridges, but yep. Still. There's a health concern right now about that entire issue.
Okay, so that's an issue we could see action on before they go home next February or March. And now let's listen to a little bit of that civil dialogue on that subject of vaping between Speaker Voss and Democratic Leader Hintz.
We certainly should make sure that kids who are in school do not have access to vaping. It should not be something that's safely used by those children. But I do think if adults want to, I don't want to stand in the way of that. They should have every right to.
So potentially raise the age, but maybe not to 21?
Perhaps. I think that's a potential compromise. I know there is not enough support in my caucus at this point to do the 21-year-old age as a bill that would pass. But I'm working to try to see if maybe 18 or 19 is a more reasonable age where we could focus on kids in school not having access to it, where they really already shouldn't, but the law is not as clear as it could be.
If you talk to teachers and schools, and if you look at the people that are registered in support of the bill, it's along with cell phones, it's a major distraction. And I think it's got to be above 18 just because there are 18-year-olds in high school, and that makes it difficult. But I do think this is a public health thing. It shouldn't be a partisan thing. This should be one area that I'm hopeful what comes out of the hearing is people that might have questions about it can get those answered and get behind this.
Speaker Paul Ryan, who now lives in a Washington, D.C. suburb, did announce what's the American Idea Foundation, a Janesville-based 501c3 that he said the mission will be working with community organizations, academics, and lawmakers to fight poverty and increase economic opportunities. Remember, JR, since he didn't seek re-election, he did move to the D.C. suburbs, and he's now on the board of Fox Corporation. Before I give you a chance to talk about why he did this, his quote, "This foundation will demonstrate that it is the bottom-up dynamism of individuals and communities that truly makes America a land of prosperity. It'll help those organizations working to expand opportunities." Is this him keeping his oar in the political dialogue, or is this him chasing all the dreams he couldn't chase with President Trump?
I asked some people this week about this because, don't forget, he began transferring money to this group from his leadership PAC and his personal campaign account this spring. Yeah. Total transfer of $7.2 million, according to reports that I looked at. That's a lot of money that was originally given to him to go help candidates and himself win election. And talking to some folks, he said, look, you know, there's not that much blowback about the transfer of the money. Some Democrats said, hey, this is probably not going to go over well with some donors, but he can use that money to try and produce ideas, you know, produce papers. Ryan was always the idea guy for the Republican Party, right?
Right.
It's brain, essentially.
Right.
The issue for him is going to be the party is not where Paul Ryan is anymore. So how does Paul Ryan have influence with a party that's now a Trump party? Is it with states? Is it with think tanks? Is it pushing position papers? What's this thing going to look like going forward, and how will it have influence? I'm not sure about that yet.
Well, my follow-up question, JR, is why base it in Janesville? He no longer lives here.
The move is supposed to be temporary to D.C., remember? So they said it wasn't going to be
permanent. I understand. He didn't sell his Janesville house.
Mm-hmm.
You see this as a sign that he might still run for something in Wisconsin?
Oh, when I asked people about that, the ship has sailed on Paul Ryan running for higher office.
Ship has sailed.
Unless there is a dramatic change in the foundation, the base of the Republican Party right now, the party chose Trump over Ryan. Let's be honest. Even in Wisconsin, his numbers started to drop among the party faithful.
That's true.
Because he was out in the outs with President Trump and was critical of him.
Booze out there. Mm-hmm. Before we get to stock picks, can you recap what Joint Finance did on Thursday?
A couple of things. Finance came in and approved its first settlement under the lame duck session requirements of DOJ submitting to the committee or legislature certain settlements. Now, this one was unique because both sides in this settlement agreed to have the details put out there in public ahead of it being signed off by a judge. Basically, it's a case about this Milwaukee retailer selling synthetic cannabinoids. They agreed to a forfeiture, fine, attorney's fees and costs, and agreed not to do it anymore, essentially.
Okay.
So it's not the complex cases that we're expecting or that have been hung up before with joint finance. There's some more cases out there hanging out there. During the hearing, Democrats said just because we approved one doesn't mean this process works. Republicans countered, this process works fine, but there are people in this building, i.e. Democrats and Josh Call, who don't want it to work, and we think are trying to kind of undercut the process.
And they also had a hearing on the bill that would close the pay disparity between public defenders and ADAs, assistant district attorneys, but that was just a hearing, no vote?
Took public testimony on that. The other thing that they did was the U.S. administration about a month ago had asked for the creation of a bunch of new positions, about 60 or so, across several agencies. They had about 21 of those jobs before joint finance. And when an AG once creates a job, basically submits it to finance saying, look, this is what we want to do. You guys have to sign off on this authority to have this new position.
Yep.
Before they took up the request, they said, we're not going to actually do this today. We are, and didn't say why, but we found out later on there's a letter sent from the co-chairs to the administration secretary, Joel Brennan, basically saying, look, there are all these jobs that are vacant right now in state government. Going forward, we want you guys to offset any new jobs you want to create with a vacancy, and you need to resubmit all these requests to us if you want to consider them. The administration said, look, no thanks, we're not doing that. This is petty politics, and it's ridiculous you guys are doing this. So another example of how the Capitol is basically broken right now.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for the recap of finance. Let's go to your stock picks, rising.
So Milwaukee Brewing, Miller, the parent
Molson
company,
Coors.
Molson Coors, whatever it's going to be nowadays, it is restructuring. They're shedding jobs nationally, but Milwaukee is going to benefit. An unknown number of human resources jobs are going to Milwaukee. So good thing for them. I mean, it's no longer
high-paying jobs, more than 100K each. Excuse me.
No longer the headquarters of Miller. You know, Miller's now a subsidiary of this giant corporation. But it's good for Milwaukee and the brewing industry in Milwaukee that are getting this infusion of jobs out there.
Okay, and just a P.S., there's a headline in the Denver Post today. Do you know what it is?
No.
Will the name of Coors Field stay? Anyway, okay.
Well, Miller Park is no more.
That's true.
Right next to it.
Yeah, American Family Mixed.
So Ron Kind voted for the impeachment resolution, basically the procedure going forward. Look, we've talked this before. Ron Kind is walking a thin line in the 3rd District because you have a district that voted for Donald Trump, right, by 5 points. But Ron Kind, who was this big target for Republicans, got almost 60% of the vote last fall. So why? That's the question. Why is he voting for this? Because he said just like a month ago, impeachment should be the last resort. He repeated that again in his statement. It should be the last resort. But as a prosecutor, we should move forward, find out what's going on. His office noted in 1998, he was one of 31 Democrats who voted to move ahead with the impeachment process against Bill Clinton. So trying to say, look, I just want the facts, ma'am. For Kind, you know, look, he's got to know that the Democratic Party, the base, is not where he is. There is a progressive base in the party that Ron Kind's not really in touch with. Okay. He doesn't want to be the next victim of an AOC, although I have doubts about a true primary challenge, raising up and getting Ron Kind, but watch that base. And oh, by the way, there's no announced candidate or named candidate among Republicans, so he's got no threat from the right or the left right now, or a serious one from the left. It seems like he's walking that thin line again and shoring up his flanks.
Okay, and let's just make it clear. All of our three House Dems voted for the impeachment resolution.
Republicans voted against
it. And our four Republicans, and there's a vacancy, of course, in the 7th, which is where you're going to now, potentially with your falling.
So Sean Duffy, look, CNN hired Sean Duffy to say conservative and provocative things, to defend the president. But you have both Ron Johnson and Liz Cheney, who is a congressman from Wyoming, who is no wilting flower when it comes to conservative politics, saying criticizing this lieutenant colonel's patriotism is a step too far, which is something that Sean Duffy and other conservatives did this past week. Look, I asked about this, like, some people aren't surprised. You know, this is kind of in line with Duffy's MO. He's said things before that his mouth worked faster than his brain, okay? He's also a very deep and personal defender of the president. They're on the same team. But sometimes there's a little bit of fallout when you say things that really don't sit well with people on both sides of the aisle. My question is, people kind of thought that Sean Duffy would have a comeback in him. You know, remember he resigned because his 9th child was born, some health challenges,
yes.
Went to be home with the family. He's got this TV gig now with CNN where he can jot down the road to the studio in Wausau, do the daily hit, fly out East Coast on the weekends and do something once in a while. That this kept him in the spotlight, right? But is he want to be a conservative media conservative media personality, or does he want to be an elected official? Because at some point, if you say too many things, you damage the brand for a run for public office because you can't just win on the base. You need the middle sometimes. That's something to watch with him. What's his future going to be?
That's a good call. Okay, let's look at next week. I'm going to interview the new the CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. I'm also going to have both party chairs here to look at the 1 year before the presidential election. And Wisconsin I is going to cover toasting Tony Earle, in honor of his 50th year that he was elected to the Assembly, the seat of Dave Obey, then went on to be DNR Secretary and Governor. That's next Thursday. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And that's Rewind for the week of October 28.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.